strikes, perjury, and technology. What does that have to do with social work? My name is Ernesto Bejarano, and it's time to find out what happened this week in social work. Hey everyone, thanks for watching This Week in Social Work, the show where we look into the good, the bad, and the interesting in the world of social work. Our first story this week is coming out of the Atlanta public school system, where Ms. Terilyn Rivers Cannon has been named the National School Social Worker of the Year. And I just thought that was interesting, number one, because it's in Atlanta, and I'm not an expert on Atlanta, but from what I know, there's a decent African-American population there. Correct me if I'm wrong. And so to think that this is one of our colleagues, this is the first African-American to have won this award, it seems a little late to me, but I'm happy that it's happening in Atlanta, in a city with what I believe to be a fairly high African-American population. So I'm really glad to see that a social worker that's also African-American, who I would think understands that experience and is able to connect with the children and the youth in those schools, is really recognized for the work that she's done. So congratulations to Ms. Rivers Cannon for being the school social worker of the year. So our third story this week is coming out of Iowa City. And it's a story that many of us are familiar with, many of us are very wary of and are very conscious of, particularly in child welfare. I've spent many years working in child welfare, and so this is one that also hits home with me, and obviously I believe many of you are watching this as well. So this is a story of an Iowa social worker that was charged with perjury for delivering false testimony that helped convince a judge to remove four children from their parents. So as a child welfare worker, your job comes with a tremendous amount of responsibility in terms of not only providing the appropriate services to the children and families that you serve, but also your role as the eyes and ears of the court. So the things that you report to the court, that you include in your court reports, that you discuss and work on with your families and your case plans, it's very crucial and important to be precise and detailed and accurate in the things that you say, you document, and that you report. Unfortunately, in this case, it seems as though we have one of our colleagues who, for whatever reason, was not exactly forthcoming in the information that she presented to the court. So in the article, it says that she's charged with knowingly giving false information during a December 2017 hearing in which she recommended a judge terminate the parental rights of a mother and father. Now, termination of parental rights, for those of us that are in child welfare, we know that is one of the most extreme and the hardest parts of our job. It's something that we want to take very seriously and be very cautious about how we come to that decision. Apparently, in this case, one of our colleagues was not as careful, was not as honest, was not as responsible as she needed to be, and she was criminally charged. And so she's charged with 3 counts of perjury, a felony that carries up to 5 years in prison. Now, in her testimony, she stated that she had spoken with the children's teachers about their academic and social concerns. Now, the reality is that she later admitted she hadn't spoken to the teachers at all, and she only got secondhand emails that were forwarded to her from the foster mother. So she made some very important decisions in court based on secondhand hearsay information, and she lied in court. And she also admitted that she falsely testified that she saw the children at least once a month. For those of you who aren't in child welfare, one of the requirements is that we see the children on our caseload at a minimum of once a month. And that may not be the requirement in every state, but I know in California where I live, and in Iowa apparently, it is the standard. So there was numerous challenges and numerous missteps taken in this case. Now, on the one hand, in my opinion, we need to hold our colleagues accountable for when they are not performing up to the standards of the organization, of the NASW code of ethics. However, on the other hand, I have seen, and I think this sometimes speaks to the workload and all the different challenges that child welfare workers have, because I've seen during the month when there are so many different crises going on, so many different challenges and ongoing issues that need to be dealt with, it is very hard, bordering on impossible often, to do everything that you need to do in the timely fashion that you need to do it. So those types of situations with high caseloads, not enough staffing, is kind of asking for things like this to happen. We all need to be accountable to the work that we do, because the families that we work with are depending on our good, honest work. But on the other hand, we also, I think, need to understand that the work itself sometimes makes it difficult to impossible to do it actually the way it should be done. So this is the type of story that we do unfortunately see sometimes. It is actually related to another story that we have this week. So sticking with the theme of school social work, we have our second story here, which is an article that was put out by the St. Louis American. And the article is "Schools Need More Social Workers, Not Cops." Now, this particular story is hitting home with me this month because I'm actually, as part of the work that I do in the community, an elected official on a local school board. And this is actually a topic that not only in my district, but a lot of districts are beginning to question of where we're putting our resources towards law enforcement and or towards behavioral health, social workers, counselors, to do some intervention and some prevention. And obviously there's a role for both of those professions, but it's becoming more and more of an issue of where we spend our money. So in this article, they mentioned that in 2018, there was the most school shootings since 1970 with 82, which was almost double the previous year at 43. So in a response to that, many schools have begun to increase their law enforcement, their security. They're adding police, they're adding student resource officers, metal detectors. These things are happening in many schools at the expense of counselors, social workers, prevention and intervention services. And the evidence suggests that the way that we're going with law enforcement being the primary way to address the issue is actually harmful to students. And the American Civil Liberties Union is pointed out in the article. They released a report called "Cops and No Counselors: How the Lack of School Mental Health Staff is Harming Students." So one of the concerns in the district that I represent, and in many districts, and it's brought up here in the article, is that there's been a persistent shift of resources away from social workers and towards school security guards. And these shifts reflect our country's inequities, because what we find is that minority students are more likely than white students to attend schools with security guards and no social workers. The issue of police versus social workers and counselors, where do you dedicate resources, it's always been an issue, but it seems to be coming more to the forefront with current trends and what we're seeing with school shootings and school violence in general. So something for us to stay on top of and make sure that we as social workers are at the table advocating for what we believe and what we know to be the most effective way to address these issues. So our fourth story this week is coming out of West Dunbartonshire, Scotland. Sorry if I didn't pronounce that right. But the story in Scotland is that workers there have voted to take strike action, claiming that unacceptable workloads are putting vulnerable clients at risk of harm. Now, this is exactly what I was talking about in the previous story from Iowa, in that workers worldwide, not just in the United States, not just in California where I live, but worldwide, we are seeing similar challenges. And I think most of us, if not all of us, know that staffing and caseloads is a constant issue for us. And in Scotland, our colleagues have said enough is enough. We can't do this anymore. And what they have said is that they're warning that social workers fear their service was at a crisis point. This type of discussion has been had before about we are not doing the service that we need to be doing with our families because we don't have enough staffing. And so I know the issue of taking a strike action has come up in other places, but I tip my cap to our colleagues in Scotland who are holding strong and moving forward with this, because at some point, I think that we as a profession need to take a stand and demand the resources and demand the respect that we need and deserve. And it is about time that we demand that as professionals, both for our own well-being, but to make sure, just as is being pointed out by our colleagues in Scotland, that we are able to provide our families with the services that they need to get, and we are not impeded by a caseload that is too large for us to feasibly get that work done. Ending on a good note here this week, and the story is Social Work Helper hosts second annual Global Social Welfare Digital Summit. So a few years ago, I actually had made contact with the founder and the editor-in-chief of Social Work Helper, whose name is Deanna Hooper. And so I was planning to present at the previous digital summit, the Social Welfare Digital Summit. But I actually, as I mentioned, I ran for a school board position and during that time, and so I was unable to present. But I always keep track of what's going on with Social Work Helper, and I saw that they had their second annual summit just recently in the end of March. And so they had several presentations. It seems like it was a success, and they're planning on having another Global Social Welfare Digital Summit next year. One of the presentations in particular I was interested in was presented by Hans Versteeg of the Netherlands. And again, I apologize for pronunciation there, but he presented a session entitled How to Benefit from Social Media for Nonprofits and Helping Professionals. To my selfish ends, I wanted to end with and talk about this story because it discusses social work and technology. And as you may have seen from the name of my channel here, I am very interested in the integration of social work and technology. And how I see it at this point, I think there's almost two paths that we can go down as social workers in terms of how we use technology. One is utilizing tools that already exist. That may be social media. It may be tools that we use for documentation, for communication, for a number of different things. Many of you, I'm sure, are already using digital technological tools to help you in the work that you do. But I think the other path that we can definitely look into, and I actually have started going down that path, is actually developing tools that are tailored, because we're going to develop them from scratch, tailored to the needs of social workers. So those could be in the form of a website or an app, or it could be things like bots. I don't know how many of you are familiar with what bots are, but that's an up and coming trend. So the two paths that I foresee for social work right now is utilizing tools and platforms that are already existing or that others will develop for just general use, and we adapt them to what our needs are. Or on the other track, that we actually become a little more savvy, or some of us that are a little more savvy, to develop our own tools that are built almost from the ground up that are specifically tailored to the things that we need. So when I see things like the Global Social Welfare Digital Summit, say that three times fast, I am very encouraged about where we are going as a profession. And I think that we have a lot of opportunity to create our digital futures if we just get involved. So I'm glad that we can end this week in social work with a new story about the things that are possible in a positive way for social work. And I hope that this first edition, actually, of This Week in Social Work has been interesting, informative, helpful for you. If it has, subscribe to this channel and hit the little notification bell so that when next week's edition comes out, you'll be the first to know and you can find out what's going on this week in social work. So thanks for watching, and I will see you next week.